continue to hear from people in Ohio and continue to hear from elected officials. We have some things that, orders that we're issuing today that Dr. Acton will be issuing. The following will all be closed as of business close today. Our fitness centers and our gyms, bowling alleys, public rec centers, movie theaters, I think most of them already closed, indoor water parks, indoor trampoline parks. So they will all close under an order of the Department of Health, Dr. Acton, as of close of business today. We continue to evolve. Every day we continue to have more facts. We process more information. CDC guidelines have changed in regard to mass congregations, mass meetings. As you saw, they were changed to 50 from where they had been at 100. We will comply with that, or we will, a better word is conform. We will conform our order, and so we will modify our order from 100 to 50. Throughout this crisis, we have, as facts as we know them change, we have tried to follow the best science and the best information from the best people that we have. And so that continues. It is clear that tomorrow's in-person voting does not conform and cannot conform with these CDC guidelines. We cannot conduct this election tomorrow, the in-person voting for 13 hours tomorrow, and conform to these guidelines. We have received calls. The Lieutenant Governor and I have talked to people from throughout Ohio who, frankly, are very conflicted. Conflicted in whether they vote tomorrow. We continue to stress that people 65 years of age and older should not leave their home unless absolutely, absolutely necessary. And we, again, we'll say that today. Dr. Acton will talk today about that. So it is people 65 and older, also people who have any kind of medical, they're compromised medically. We know from what we have seen in other countries and the data that we, best available data we have, that they are certainly most at risk. These individuals are conflicted, and it's not just those 65 years of age or older. It is women who are pregnant. It is people who are compromised medically. We should not force them to make this choice, a choice between their health and their constitutional rights and their duties as American citizens. Further, we should not be in a situation where the votes of these individuals who are conflicted are suppressed. It is therefore my recommendation, after talking with the Secretary of State, talking with the Attorney General, talking with the Lieutenant Governor, that voting be extended until June 2nd, that no in-person voting occur today, but rather that in-person voting occur on June 2nd, but between now and then, that absentee ballot voting be permitted. This should extend the period of time so that people will not have to choose between their constitutional rights and their health. This was not a decision that was easily made. Like most of the decisions that we've had to make. But it is, I believe, the right thing to do. I understand, and I can say this from my personal experience as a candidate many times, that win or lose, you're always looking forward to Election Day. You obviously prefer winning, but you're anxious to get it over with. This extends it, and I fully understand this changes a lot of people's plans. But I think it is the right thing to do. Now, I do not have the power to extend an election, as I am suggesting. My understanding, and I will paraphrase the statute, that this only can occur if we are invaded. I have jokingly, and not so jokingly, said to our lawyers, I think we've been invaded. But I think we all know that was not the intent of what the law says. That was not what was envisioned, although this certainly is an invasion. Therefore, there will be a lawsuit filed in Common Pleas Court in Franklin County today by individuals who are in that position or similar position to what I have described. We would hope that suggestion in that filing, and I'll let Frank LaRose talk about this in more detail, but that filing would contain the essence of what I just said. We'd anticipate that a judge would hold a hearing, and we would then move on from there. It is important, and I'm going to turn it over to the Secretary of State, who has done an amazing job, and his workers and boards of election, and I have a message for all those who work in local boards of election. You have done a phenomenal job. We know that this decision is difficult, but I want to just congratulate you for what you have done. A couple additional comments. We cannot tell people, as we are telling them, and as Dr. Acton will be saying in a few moments, that they really, really need to stay home, and that's in the best interest of their health, that the risk is high, and at the same time, tell them to go vote. Let me also say that we have, Frank tells me, 35,000 poll workers, something in that vicinity. These are people who are going to be there 13 hours or more. These are people who are going to be in contact with a lot of people that day, tomorrow. Many of these poll workers are older. And again, when we think about putting them together with so many people, it is frankly not fair to them, even though many of them have said, yes, we'll continue to do this. And some of them have done it for many, many years. We do not know who coming through the line, who has been infected. Conversely, we don't know if any of the poll workers have been infected, because this is a situation where the evidence shows that people. And Dr. Acton talked about this yesterday when she went back and looked at the dates of the people when the onset first occurred. And there's a long, and then you go back even further than that when they were infected. So there's a period of time when some people don't know they're infected. And some people, don't really know it at all. Again, these people are carriers and may not know that. I believe that while this decision is a tough decision, and it's a decision that I'm sure someone, many people may say was the wrong decision, I think when we look back on this, we're going to be glad we did this. The rights of voters are preserved. Each voter will be given an ample opportunity to vote. The votes that have already been cast have been cast, and Frank can talk about this, but my understanding is they just are not counted. They're there. They will stay there, frozen. But voting for others will be able to be continued. So let me now introduce Frank LaRose, who he and his team have just done a phenomenal job all the way through. Frank.
Thank you, Governor. Thank you, Lieutenant Governor. Thank you, Dr. Acton. Suspending in-person voting is a serious matter, and we have tried to do everything we could to avoid that. All along, we have taken our advice from the public health professionals, and obviously this situation has evolved quickly in the last few days. The advice over the last week had been clear. It would be safe for both poll workers and for voters to come out to vote on Tuesday. We were proceeding on that course. I can tell you that many thousands of very dedicated Ohioans were working hard to make that happen. And I just want to say thank you to them for their patriotism and for their dedication. Sometimes we take it maybe for granted when elections happen as just sort of this ubiquitous thing that happens a couple times a year, but a lot of work goes into conducting an election. And by the way, it's a thoroughly bipartisan process. This is an opportunity for Ohioans to come together as Republicans and Democrats and do this really tough work of running elections. Over the last couple of days, we've seen the best of Ohio on display as over 2,500 patriotic Ohioans were stepping up and volunteering to be poll workers. They were being trained over the weekends. The boards of elections were working on getting all the materials and supplies out to the polling locations to make sure that we could conduct a safe election. But of course, now the advice of our public health officials has evolved with this public health emergency, and we know that it would not be safe. And there is only one thing in my mind more important than a free and fair election, and that is the health and safety of our fellow Ohioans. Health and safety of our fellow Ohioans is not negotiable. Obviously, we can't stand here and tell people over 65 that they should stay at home and at the same time tell Ohioans that they should come out to vote. And as the governor mentioned, the power to suspend an election, the power to delay an election, is not one that we have. It rests with the legislature and with the courts. The decision that I made is to get recommendations ready, anticipating that there would be a lawsuit as a result of this. I will be directing my attorney, the Ohio Attorney General Dave Yost, to not contest that lawsuit. But we will be submitting to the court for their consideration our recommendation. And as the governor mentioned, that recommendation is that there be no in-person voting tomorrow, that the boards of elections continue to receive absentee ballots, though, and that Election Day be postponed until June 2nd. During the intervening several weeks between now and then, we will continue to allow people to request and submit vote-by-mail absentee ballots. Again, this is in the best interest of Ohioans and in the safety of Ohioans, and my heart goes out to those many elections officials that have worked hard to make this happen and to those candidates and their families who have worked hard, but this is the right decision. I hope and anticipate that the judge will agree with us, but we'll be submitting that for the judge's consideration this afternoon. Thank you.
John?
Thanks, Frank. Thank you, Frank. I do want to thank Secretary LaRose and all of the elections officials who have been working to prepare for this. As the governor mentioned, very difficult decision for him to make, for the secretary to make. But we did receive a number of calls with people and their personal real stories from poll workers and the like who said, look, we'll go see this through tomorrow if you really want us to do this, but we're really scared. We're really scared for our health. We're really scared about what this means. Talk to people who had voted every election in their lives and were going to skip tomorrow out of their health concerns. These are the very real choices that people were going to have to make. And ultimately, it is not fair to force them to have to pick their health or their constitutional rights. And by extending the voting period, everybody will have a chance to vote by mail so that they don't have to come in contact with another person, consistent with what Dr. Acton and the health officials are urging everyone to do. This window of voting by mail, if the court grants it, will be open for everyone. And that really achieves the goal of making sure that everybody can exercise their constitutional right safely. It's also worth noting that earlier today, we spoke with the two state party chairs, David Pepper and Jane Timken, who were consulted and supported the decision. And so wanted to let everybody know that, look, as a former Secretary of State, I know the burden that this creates for the Secretary, but I also know that the governor has used science and the best medical advice to make decisions, and when that advice changes, he quickly adapts and tries to keep the people of Ohio safe, and that's the motivation for the decision here.
Let me just add one additional thing, and I'm going to ask Dr. Acton to speak a little bit about the situation today and our advice. Look, some people will say, well, gee, they could have voted. They had all the time to vote. They could have voted absentee. And that's true. But I think we all know people who, they vote on election day. This is what they do. And the facts continue to change. And not only do the facts continue to change, quite bluntly, the public's understanding of the facts continue to change. And so what may have looked a week ago like the right decision, I'm going to wait, I'm going to vote on election day. I always do, someone might say. The reality and what people are hearing today and what the messages are today, whether it's in the national news or here, is be careful. You know, be very, very, very careful if you're 65 and older, if you have compromised health. And so, again, as that is sinking in, people now have this, are very, very conflicted. And we know they're conflicted because we're hearing from them. So I want to ask Dr. Acton to talk a little bit about, because the message from today is again, it's not just about this election. What I want people to hear when they watch this tonight or they're watching now is the importance of those individuals who are 65 and older and the risks that they take when they leave. And I would say to their neighbors and friends, if you have someone in that age or that medical condition, help them out. Volunteer to get their groceries for them. Volunteer to help them in any way that you can. We are all in this together. Dr. Acton.
Thank you, Governor. Good afternoon, everyone. I want to start out, as I usually do, by saying I'll try to explain a little more of the science today. I do hope my team is put together. We've been doing this every day in Ohio, and there's a lot of science and discussions we've had, so we've compiled those, the past press conferences, to help folks sort of catch up to where we are, but we know that everyone isn't there. Let me start out by saying we do, as of earlier today, with many, many more tests coming in every moment, we did confirm on our website 50 positive tests. A week ago was our first case. So 50 cases. And as I've said, cases are people who have been tested. Our testing is expanding. It's still concentrated a lot around what we call in Ohio the big three C's, the bigger cities. A lot of people are coming from counties to that. And that capacity is building. We'll be talking more about that in days to come. But we know that's the tip of the iceberg. Again, the onset of our cases as early as symptoms of February 7th through March 15th. As we said yesterday, knowing that folks have to be infectious before they're symptomatic. So we know with the cases and the histories we're getting now that there's just so much community spread that we can't tie to the travel history or to a contact, although there are some of those as well. The age range today, 14 to age 86, with a median age of 51. 20 females, 30 males, hospitalizations 14. So, and we'll have more information on our counties on our website, but I think that gives you a sense. It's what we've been saying. It's what we're predicting. This shouldn't be surprising to folks. But I think that's important to note, 86-year-old, 14-year-old, we do know that children get this. We do know that there are very high risk groups that we have to talk about today. And we do know that we are on the upslope of this curve. So today, when I began this week and when I talked to my team and I talked with the governor's team, I had three major priorities into this week. As we talked about, we moved a lot of the big rocks. When you don't have a vaccine, when you can use these evidence-based community mitigation strategies that you see being deployed around the world, the non-pharmacologic interventions, we moved a lot of those big rocks. And as I told you, we'll go to the next cascading layer, and we keep working our way through what the next policy decisions are. And so I thought a lot this week that I'll be very focused on the healthcare system, and you'll be hearing more in the days to come, everything we're doing with our incredible partnership with our hospitals and our primary care physicians, and we'll be revealing a lot more of the strategy that they're working on. I'm thinking a lot about our vulnerable populations, and we have teams that are deployed working on things from homelessness to, you know, the school meals and everything you can possibly think of and strategies around that. And then thirdly, and this is very important, and public health communication is everything. We've had, you know, just an amazing response on our hotline, our 833-4-ASK-ODH number, on our website, coronavirus.ohio.gov. We are ramping that up rapidly. I get lots of information, just like everyone else here. Family, friends, anyone I've ever known in my life, mayors, commissioners, everyone has ideas of what more we could do. And we're ramping up communications as quickly as we can, trying to keep up with the changing news. I really appreciate everyone's patience, even when they've had to wait for a call back. We have talked this morning with our congressional delegation, with our senators, and I can tell you the whole country is moving today. We talked to the president and the vice president and other governors on a call today, and as you'll see now, everyone is sort of moving full court press into this next stage. And we know that timing is everything, that every day and every person matters. So we are in that full court press mode, and some things I want to share with you. High-risk groups, we talk a lot about this, and as we know, 65 and older, particularly vulnerable, up to 15 times the fatality rate in our early studies on this. And significantly, we must protect this population. And with that, I say, like I say with everyone right now, if it is non-essential, you should not be doing it. And especially for the elderly, I know talking to my in-laws, unfortunately, you know, my father has passed. I'm talking to my uncles and aunts. But, you know, with my in-laws, you know, my father-in-law is in his mid 80s as well, and we're making all these decisions that a lot of people at home are making. They're not, you know, we're trying to help them with groceries. We're trying to help them not have to go to the store. the president and vice president assured us, you know, we're closing a lot of things, but please know at home, food, grocery stores will remain open, medicine will remain open, banks will remain open. So we are working very hard to keep those lifelines, and even in other countries, very hard hit, they have times, even in China, even in Italy, where people can restock. But, you know, we're trying to make those elective choices, you know, by helping out our elderly, not something they have to take. But we have other high-risk groups. I've said before, heart disease, diabetes, pre-existing lung disorders, those are all high risk. Obesity has been seen to be high risk. We know this affects a lot of Ohioans. I'm also thinking a lot about people who are immunocompromised, who are being treated for cancer and other diseases where they're on drugs that actually suppress their immune system. We know that we have young kids with cystic fibrosis and other diseases, hemophilia. So we have a lot of folks who are very high risk, are on drugs that make it so that they are high risk. So all of those folks, I've had a lot of concern calls from folks about pregnancy, and they're very, very nervous about that. And so, you know, we know there's very little data right now on that. Obviously, getting any infection during pregnancy, a fever is known to be high risk. But there isn't solid data yet for those recommendations. We're going to stay very close attuned to that in terms of that. So we have a lot of folks out there who are scared and worried, and therefore we have to consider them being able to stay at home and stay healthy as possible. We are working, again, with vulnerable populations, and I'm just so pleased at the federal level our senators are leading, and we are going to work on policies and stay tuned on all that. I know it's hard to tolerate ambiguity and not have every answer right now, from your gym to a bowling alley to I've been reached out by the person who cuts my hair, although very infrequently, every 3 months, because who has time? Even she, who is pregnant right now, reached out and said, what do we all do? Should I keep doing my work? And these are hard answers, and we don't have every scientific answer yet, so we will keep guiding you as best we can, but we're all having to make some very hard decisions right now. PPE remains a really important thing. Part of our healthcare advice, but we'll be giving this out soon, for the food and beverage industry, you have a lot of latex and nitrile gloves, you know, the gloves that we wear in preparing food. If folks are not using those, we've been asked, similarly with the asks you're going to be hearing about delaying unnecessary ambulatory surgical surgeries, and dentists and veterinarians are going to be asked this in the days to come. If you have PPE, the protective gear, whether they masks, surgical N95, gloves, face shields that you will not be using. If you can get those to your local EMA, they will collect those. And we'll be talking more about that in time to come. But I know our food and beverage industry has offered to help with that as well. I just want to say the American Academy of Pediatrics, we've reached out to our Ohio chapter to work very hard. Pediatricians want some more guidance. Our parents are wondering what you can do, what is safe for your child, and we're working on getting that guidance with the best medical experts we can. I want to thank the Secretary of State and his team. We've worked tirelessly. We worked first on nursing homes and removing that from there. We've worked hard on making sure that the elderly in the nursing homes could vote. We've worked closely in the last few days. I'm proudly wearing the vote pin that I received. And I asked you, and people responded, to go out and register to be a poll voter, and I thank you for doing that. We have done every possible thing we can with the knowledge we've had, and I just thank his team. And I thank you at home, and we'll have more for you.
A couple of things to update and emphasize. Dr. Acton said, we were on the call with President, Vice President, and we're in meetings. We want to provide some reassurance. The grocery stores are going to remain open. You're going to have access to the essentials of life. That's what this is all about. This is all about eliminating the threats from the non-essential so that we can provide the essential. Restaurants are available to provide carry-out meals, delivery. please make sure that you use their services. You will want them to be there when we get through this economically and continue to support them. If you're a business and you small business who are impacted by this, remember assistance is available at businesshelp@development.ohio.gov. Additionally, we have unemployment compensation services for those employees who are displaced by this situation. Unemployment.ohio.gov. I want to repeat that. Unemployment.ohio.gov. Right now, last check, one Sunday ago, we had 562 applications. This past Sunday, we had 12,000. You can see that people are being impacted. The call line is an hour and 40-minute wait right now. So if you can please use, if you have the availability, the website. That will help make the call line available for those people who do not have website access. All of us working together, cooperating, can help make this process easier for everyone. However, if you do have no other way to reach, you can't reach through a computer, you have the toll-free number 1-877-644-6562. And I want to mention this again. One of the ways that's going to be really important for employers to help this, what Dr. Acton's been talking with, is to slow the spread. If you have an employee who's exhibiting signs of an illness, send them home. Do not keep them at your business. They are eligible. If you don't have paid sick leave, they are eligible for unemployment immediately under this program. Do not keep a sick person at work because whether they have an essential mission or not, send them away, put a healthy person in there to do this. Another option for employers is to remember, when we get through this, and we will, and the economy will rebound, you're going to need those skilled employees. Take care of them now. Help them out. And we also have ways for you to do this through Shared Work. Shared Work is a program through the Ohio Department of Job and Family Services. It can help you manage both the size of your workforce and help get those who need it into a training program. We have available right now a window of opportunity where we will pay for employer training under the TechCred program, techcred.ohio.gov. Many of these opportunities are available with distance learning, upgrading your computer skills, learning to code, doing all the kinds of things that the economy will demand of you when we recover. Enroll and help upskill your employees during this time period so when we rebound, we will be ready to restore the Ohio economy, create opportunities for the workforce. We understand the dramatic impact that these decisions have on real people, businesses, and their daily lives. We are trying to build that support structure around you as fast as we can. We talked with the president and the vice president today. We talked with our congressional delegation. We hope that federal action will help give a boost to these efforts. But know that actually for people in our world, I found it kind of, it hit home today for people with this election news, because I know that there are a lot of people in our line of work who are really impacted by this. And they were saying to themselves, oh my gosh, this is really going to disrupt my life. Public officials, we're all in this, okay? Everybody who's on the ballot, these kind of same disruptions are happening to small business owners and families and everybody across the state. We are all going to experience this disruption. And as we, you know, understand that and build these support systems around each other, we'll all get through this much better. Thank you.
Let me just add one more comment about rumors. John talked about a little bit about the grocery stores staying open. These rumors about all kinds of things. We've always had people who spread rumors. Today we have the internet, so it's it becomes more of a challenge. But a lot of good information out there. People have the ability to get the good information. So we're going to try to knock those rumors down anytime that we have the opportunity to do it. But I just would say to the folks at home who are watching this, see this tonight, if it's a crazy rumor, it probably is a crazy rumor. As far as the grocery stores, people have to eat. We just kept getting calls about this. Are you closing the grocery stores? Well, no. You got to have that. And, we'll keep the restaurants open. And so we're down to doing what we need to do to keep people alive, keep people in their homes. And we're going to get through this. But it's going to take a while. And the goal is get everybody through this. So there will be other St. Patrick's Days, as I said yesterday, and there will be other days that we can celebrate. So more than happy to take questions.
Since day one, Dr. Atkins has been telling us about social distancing. How could you not have known at this point, the day before the election, that social distancing was going to be an issue with the election the day before you decided to cancel? Why did it take so long to make that decision? Yeah.
Part of it is, again, we try to listen to people. Sometimes public officials, aren't listening. But we try to listen. And we've had people, and I said this a moment ago, but we had people who it's just kind of got to them now. They understand, I shouldn't go out. I'm pregnant, or I'm, 75 years old, or whatever. I have this medical problem, and now I get it. I really shouldn't go out, and I am now very, very conflicted. Those are stories we're hearing from real people. And it's taken, two things are going on. Our understanding of what's going on, CDC changing down to 50, other things that are going on, and we process these. I process this. Our team processes this. But the other thing that's going on that continues to change is the public's understanding. And so public, we're getting calls. We got people who are saying, look, I don't know what to do. And so we have a alternative that is disruptive, yes, but it protects people's constitutional rights and allows them to, if they've not voted, anybody's voted, they voted. But anybody who has not voted, they're now going to have an extended period of time, and they're going to be able to do it from their home. They know what the deal is now. They know that this is not going to get better immediately, and so they can make a rational decision, do I pull this down from the internet? Do I send this in and get my ballot back and vote? And we're giving them plenty of time to process that and to do that. So is it a perfect decision? No, absolutely not. But we believe it's the best of bad alternatives. And it does preserve people's constitutional rights, and it does not require them to choose between their health and exercising their constitutional right.
Those who do want to vote in person, as you talked about, why do we think June 2nd is going to be safer than March 17th?
That's a very good question. First of all, we don't know. Okay, we don't know. Let's be honest. We don't know. As we started to analyze this, and as we talked to the Secretary of State, and all of us were conferring about this, safer would have been September. Okay? We have one problem. This is a presidential election year. We have to select delegates. The Democrats have to select delegates. The Republicans have to select delegates. That would have been too late to do that. So this was the date that seemed as far out as we could push it, but within the time frame. And I don't know, Frank, if you want to talk about that, because we had relied on you for that advice of how to balance those things.
So obviously we need to be able to tell the National Democratic Party who the Ohio delegates are going to be to attend their national convention. Timing back from the date of that convention and leaving time for there to be the official canvas and certification and all of that takes us out to effectively that first Tuesday in June being the time that would be the day to hold the election as far out as we can.
Yeah, John?
Well, let me say that.
Go ahead, Frank.
Yeah. In a presidential primary, obviously, what we're doing is selecting delegates for a convention. Okay. The date of the Democratic convention is in July, I believe. The Republican convention comes a few weeks after that. In order to accommodate that date, we need to, in order to send the right delegates to that convention, we timed back from that, given the time that it takes to do the certification, to allow contests of ballots that occur and all that kind of thing, to try to keep as much of the normal aspect of how we run elections in intact as well. And that date was June 2nd.
John?
Let me add something to Secretary LaRose and I spoke about this morning based on Governor kind of tasked us to try to figure out a way to do this. What this guarantees is that everybody will have ample time. So you've talked about that June 2nd time frame. Everybody who doesn't want to run the risk of having to go vote in person will have ample time to request that vote by mail ballot and cast it so that they don't have to put that, that don't have to put themselves at risk. So to Jim's point, why the date? We have this issue that comes from the timing of the delegates, but also anybody who is of concern about their health will have ample time to vote by mail and not have to come in contact with another person so that we're not putting that conflict of people worried about their health and their constitutional right. And just on the theme that the governor made about how things are constantly changing, you know, Dan just handed me a note that the Associated Press is reporting that the Trump administration is recommending no gatherings of more than 10 people. And so we not only have this, so we have the CDC, we have this new advice that we keep getting, the decisions that we are making are, you know, in line with where the country is going on these issues. We recognize that the timing of this decision is not ideal, but I know that my wife thought we were going on spring break this week 7 days ago, right? Things change really quickly as we learn more about these issues, and we have to change along with them to respond to the really quickly evolving health and science advice that we're getting.
You had a question.
If I may, can I add something?
Oh, sure.
What the Lieutenant Governor just said is, of course, indicative of how quickly this changes, as he said. And just last night, to your question, we had a conversation, and the basic question that I asked Dr. Acton was, is it still, because our balance all along had been, if we can hold an election that's free and fair, but also healthy for Ohioans, then we would do that. And you don't change those kind of things unless you absolutely have to. And so up until last night, CDC, Ohio Department of Health, all the public health professionals that we were hearing from, including in the other three states that are conducting a March 17th primary, we're all getting unanimous advice. Follow the instructions. You can still hold a fair election and a safe and healthy election. And so that's why we were moving forward to do that. And obviously, as of this morning, that advice is changing. And so that's why we responded to that, to create the certainty now so that Ohioans can know that we will have an election, and hopefully, as long as the judge agrees with us that we're proposing this to, that June 2nd will be the date of that.
My question is, what happens if the judge does not agree with you and says, no, the election must go on tomorrow? Will there be enough time to get things in place?
Well, let me just say, I learned as a young assistant prosecutor that not to guess what judges are going to do, but we, nor to put myself in that position. Judges does do one thing, we do other things. I do believe that in the petition that will be a strong case made that this protects people's constitutional rights, I think, which is ultimately the question at hand. Frank?
Yeah, hypotheticals and trying to predict what the judge is going to do is not something that I'm going to want to get into, but I will say this. I know Ohio's elections officials. I've traveled to all 88 of the boards of elections just last year. I've seen their dedication and their patriotism, and they are very flexible and adaptable and creative when it comes to making sure that they can get their jobs done. And so if that was necessitated, I have no doubt that the patriotic Ohio elections officials would get that job done.
Secretary LaRose,
filed in, and how quickly you expect a response, yay or nay, whether or not this will, you'll be able to extend the primary?
Again, Common Pleas voting.
My understanding is Common Pleas Court of Franklin County. I would assume, we don't know who the judge would be, obviously. One would assume, because of the impending election, that this decision would be made to be very, very quickly. But again, I can't speak for the judge.
Talk of the National Guard being deployed. Could you speak to that?
What's the question about the Guard? I'm sorry.
There's been talk of the National Guard being deployed.
Look, the National Guard is always available. And what I've said in the past is when it's time, if it's time for the National Guard to be involved in anything, any kind of emergency, then certainly they are well prepared and they will do that. But we have no announcement today about the National Guard at all. Well, first of all, this can be enforced, but we hope that Ohioans will follow this advice. Obviously, just as any other law or rule, you can't enforce it every time, but we hope that people will follow this. And I think, again, this is a crisis that no one alive today has seen. There's no American, I don't believe, there may be somebody who is around in 1918, but they may have been pretty young. But we don't have any experience with this. But it's a once in a 100-year crisis. And so we have to come together. I was joking a moment ago about being invaded, but, we have been invaded. And we have to treat this just like we would any huge, huge national crisis.
Yeah, thank you. So we are, So that, all those conversations are underway right now within our health advisory group. And we know it's moving that way, and you'll see different states doing different levels of these. All again, we know we have the shortage of PPE, and we know we're trying to decrease the surge. Again, we're spreading it out over time so that we can serve everything for our hospitals and the most at risk and the most sick. So anything that is elective that you could choose that wouldn't put your health at risk to postpone would be that sort of procedure. The dog dental cleaning, for example. Depending, again, every situation, each clinician will be making those decisions, but it's all about conservation, and it's all about the stress on our healthcare capacity, as we're seeing around the world. So we're moving very quickly in Ohio. There is a stockpile, and we have some reserves, and we'll be giving you more numbers on that as we take better assessments of what we have. That will be coming this week. But, we know there won't be enough. One of the lessons we'll have out of this, as of many lessons we will learn about so many parts of, and many benefits we will see in the things we fix, is that our, that reliance on production and supply chain put us, in a position. And in any pandemic, they've always predicted that you would have these shortages. So we had planned in our plans, we do tabletops on what do you do when you don't have enough, just like in a war. And so our hospitals have prepared for that, and they're going through those drills, and they're kind of making those assessments now to limit what they use. And you'll see similar shortages of things like hand sanitizer and toilet paper, even in hospitals. So all of that is being troubleshot right now. And for those of you at home, soap and water kills everything, even in cleaning. So, we will, don't panic if you can't find wipes, soap and water, plentiful. I've said that before, but it's sort of reassuring to myself to think about a bar of soap is still being available to all of us. And you'll see a lot coming in the days on that.
Somebody would obtain an absentee ballot and sort of walk through that process?
Yeah, absolutely.
The good news is that Ohio has a long-standing period of early voting and vote by mail, so Ohioans are accustomed to it. In fact, we saw this year increased numbers over 2016 of adoption of early vote and vote by mail. And so many Ohioans are familiar with this. You visit voteohio.gov, which is our official Ohio Secretary of State website. You can print off your absentee ballot request, and you can mail it in, and I'd encourage Ohioans to do that. Of course, they're also available at other locations, but voteohio.gov is the easiest way to do that, and your Board of Elections will have them as well. And then, again, those would have to be sent in promptly, and then we'd mail you your absentee ballot, then you can return that by mail.
Secretary Lorenzo, I'm assuming that in voting, in-person voting at the Board of Elections will be allowed during this period as well?
That's correct. Early voting, the early voting period, which has gone on for the last 4 weeks, ended today at 2 p.m. And so the early voting period ended today at 2, and what we're doing is obviously extending the vote by mail period and then ending that period with a June 2nd in-person voting day. And then obviously the tabulation would be done then too. We wouldn't be doing any tabulation until after the polls close on June 2nd.
Governor, Dr. Acton, could you review social distancing again, physical distancing? And also, is there any indication it's working? Maybe it's too soon, but give us some hope.
Absolutely. You know, again, this is something that actually has been used before. We've used it in other spread of infectious diseases, especially during the containment phase as well. But the social distancing model is really based on, you know, what we discovered in things like bird flu and H1N1 and MERS and SARS. And so this each time we've gone through an infectious disease, and for various reasons, we did not get to, you know, that's a whole nother lecture there, why this is different than those. But social distancing has really been studied, and again, I keep calling it now physical distancing. But it is about this group spread. There's a fabulous, was it New York Times or Washington?
Washington,
thank you, Lieutenant Governor, because he sent it to me last night, and I was mesmerized because, you know, it's hard to explain these concepts. There's a Washington Post graphic that shows the spread of infectious diseases, and it's in motion, so you can watch what all the different types of social distancing look like and how it was tried in China and what worked and what didn't and how it's being used in other countries and how quickly we implement it here and what difference that will make. And it really will show you dot by dot, sort of when I keep talking about this logarithmic spread of one person to 2.8 more people, to those people to 2.8, and how the measures we take shrink that, and when we don't take it, how it expands. So I think that could be a fascinating thing for folks to take a look at to understand it. But I'm saying, for myself, you know, that arm's distance, it is spread by, you know, just even in air and breathing, certainly by respiratory droplets. So that sort of distance, 6 feet has been said. I know sometimes to make it quicker, they said a meter, I think in Italy, which was like 3 feet. But that's the concept of us not infecting each other, but it really is about us limiting the exposure to other people. And I think we'll see some creative things. I mean, people are going to make choices. And I can imagine a time with like family clusters and people that we're going to choose. Like I was with, I have 6 kids and a grandchild, so also why I forgot my daughter. She forgave me already. She is 23. Maddie's 23. But, you know, we are together and we're doing things as a family. We know that we're limiting that risk with each other. And we're kind of making, you know, a few people in our world that we are going to help each other out. That exposes us, but it keeps it limited to our group. And, you know, it would be not having your kid be in all different play dates and different groups. But I can see neighborhoods or group of friends doing that kind of choice making together. It's complicated with each life to make those decisions.
Dr. Acton, can you talk to us a little bit about where we are on the surge? Are we on the just a little ramp up part, or are we on
Well, remember, don't doubt. I mean, again, if I do this right, and this came up recently, and I think Dr. Fauci said it as well, like, if we do this well, like everything else in public health, when we knock it out of the park, look, you know, nobody knows it because it's not there. And we might have great success, and I hope, you know, that we move this, but we are going to see this surge. I mean, I don't think anyone would doubt. You know, Canada with the choices they just made with their borders. You know, this is happening. And I think there was some data I've seen with a pretty sharp, if you just look at the cases over in the United States collectively, again, because each community will be different. I expect we'll see surges, multiple Wuhans, but they'll happen at different times. We, with the benefit in Ohio and the benefit of watching what's unfolding, have moved to act now. And I definitely say to my fellow states, you know, the fact that you're not seeing it right now, or maybe you don't have enough testing to detect it, assume it is here and assume it is amongst us. If that message has not been made clear to you yet, we are on the upslope. How high that slope will go, that the rate of that curve will vary a lot with what we do and just the unique circumstances of each community and how that spread occurred. But we know, we can assume communities are seeded, and we have to just assume that any one of us, you know, 5 days from now, 14 days from now, might be sick with it. So the science will show, and this curve will make a lot of sense in retrospect, of course. But there's already data showing in the United States you can see a very sharp uptick, and we should expect that with the doubling times that we know.
Can you tell us about the 14 that are hospitalized? Can you tell us what age range those people are?
I'm sorry I can't give you those specifics. Local health departments, as they get that data, it's tough right now because we are getting, it's a Class A reportable disease, so we should be getting that data, you know, right away, but so much is happening on the ground so quickly. I think it's going to take a couple days for us to even catch up with the amount of testing because we have private labs. We have multiple medical centers right now. We have the drive-through testing. Our lab is running 3 shifts right now. And to be efficient for the media, we're saying our usual, like, 2 p.m. will give you what we know. But, you know, right now more results are coming in, more results are coming in. So I think the locals know those stories. We don't give out a lot of individual information to protect people's privacies. But I'll try to see what more I can gather. Again, 14, those were the things that alarmed me today. 14 hospitalized. And again, you know, I've said to you from the data we have, you know, even a 40 to 50 year old, 1 in 250 is the case fatality ratio right now. It's something we should all take very seriously. And we know the health of Ohioans, you know, on a good day, many of us here have health risks that we are living with, and we have to take this very seriously, all of us, no matter your age.
Has the state of our testing capacity expanded at all? Can you give us an update? Are we having more test kits? Are we able to have more hospitals testing?
Yeah, more hospitals are coming online all the time. And our drive-through capacity, you'll be hearing tomorrow a lot more detail about this. The president and vice president just talked a lot about pods. You're going to start hearing about pods, but basically that's a lot like drive-up testing. Now remember, it's so important for people at home, please hear me on this. This isn't for everyone. We are prioritizing the most high-risk folk, people with pre-existing conditions, healthcare workers, frontline responders, the elderly, the most at risk. Most doctors are going to talk to patients, and people like me will be told, let's assume you have it, and have you stay at home and quarantine or self-isolate in that case because you're sick, probably, if you've called your doctor. And we're not going to test you because there isn't, I mean, please don't be fooled by the fact that it's drive-up McDonald's testing. That is not true. You will be referred from a doctor. But it is about having these sites where people can be tested without going in the emergency room and putting the whole, you know, staff in the hospital and the waiting room at risk. So that is building up. By the end of this week, we'll have a whole story to tell that was different than today, and that will keep ramping up. But again, we don't even need that testing to know what we should do.
Commissioner, can you talk about the fact that we've acted more aggressively than many states and the fact that at least the 3 states that are supposed to have primaries tomorrow other than Ohio are still moving forward? You're acting quite aggressively. Can you respond to those who think you're overreacting?
Well, I'll let Dr. Acton do that, but look, every governor is doing the best he can or she can. Everyone is making their own calls. This is our call. I've explained why we've made it. But we do, you know, we go back and forth. We're on conference calls. I have a conference call tonight. So the information is going back and forth. I did not talk with any other governor about this. I don't want to infer that. But, you know, we are certainly are sharing information. And, you know, everybody has to make their own call and what they think is the right thing to do. And I can just tell you, you know, this is a time when every governor understands the gravity of what they are doing.
I just want to follow. Thank you. And, you know, we are really all lockstep. I mean, I'm talking to my fellow colleagues in other states. The governors are all talking to each other. Each state's a little different in what they have to deal with each time they make one of these decisions. But we're following what the scientists are saying. You know, listen to what Dr. Fauci said. Listen to what the president is now saying. Listen to, you know, Dr. Gottlieb, others who are all around, the best scientists, the best modelers. We are all following that advice. It's a playbook we already had in some ways. I know people think I'm being super predictive, but it's all predictable. It's imperfectly predictable. And what you're seeing is everyone is moving into this space as quickly as they possibly can. And I can't speak to all the messaging in the beginning that folks received, but I can tell you the message is very clear now, and everyone, this country needs to move, and they're moving aggressively to take these non-pharmacologic interventions. We're blessed to have that moment.
Can I just quickly respond to the part of the question about working with other states and the other three states that are having an election? I have talked with Secretary Lee in Florida, Secretary Hobbs in Arizona, as well as the team at the Illinois State Board of Elections. They'll make their decisions based on the facts that are presented by their public health officials. We've been telling our teams all along, this is about facts, not fear. And that's why we've been responding to the guidance of our Ohio Department of Health and the CDC about what's happening on the ground in Ohio. That's why last night we thought it was safe to conduct election. That's why today we knew that it was not. And so those colleagues in those states will make the best choices they can based on the facts on the ground there. And I want to mention the website that we have, voteohio.gov/coronafacts. If anybody's looking for more information about exactly how we will proceed conducting a fair and a healthy election for Ohio, they'll be posted at voteohio.gov/coronafacts.
Questions from our viewers who are saying that the state is not up to speed with the governor's request to speed up unemployment benefits. Is everyone on board about that? Lieutenant Governor, if you want to answer as well.
Look, every day we make different decisions. Every day we have people who need to implement it. They're moving as fast as they can move. When we make a decision, we announce that decision. You know, that's what we're going to do. John, you want to add anything to that about this particular decision?
I guess it's a very general question, so I'll give you a general answer.
Specifically, what they're saying is that when they call in for unemployment benefits, they're saying that the people who are answering the phone say that they're not aware of the governor's request to speed unemployment benefits. He wants to know why not everyone is on the same page.
I can't answer for why anybody would have responded like that on a phone call. Earlier in the news conference, I gave you the website. We are encouraging people who have web access to go and do that. That will help speed up the process. An individual caller might just know that based on this news conference that they gave the wrong answer. And you get going.
Thank you.
Yeah. All right, we'll go here.
What about shopping malls?
Here and here, and that's it then.
Okay. Shopping malls, BMVs, places like that where people are.
Look, as Dr. Acton said yesterday or the day before, we're trying to get the big ones out of the way. We're trying to get the most we can get. We can't micromanage everything of people's lives, nor should we. We'll continue to evaluate. We'll continue, frankly, to listen to mayors and county commissioners and others who are seeing things out in the field. We're going to listen to the members of Congress. We had a good call this morning. We had a good call in regard to our mayors. So we're going to continue to look at these. But ultimately, our main message today is people need to be careful. They need to take control. They need to do everything they can to avoid this and to avoid being a spreader of this.
The president is reportedly telling states to prepare their own respirators and ventilators. Is Ohio prepared with enough equipment if the federal government doesn't come through to help?
We will address that tomorrow in an overall healthcare thing, and I'll give you those numbers and what we have. We have a good supply. We have a system that knows what we have, and we do have some stockpile. But I gave some numbers about 2 days ago about the national numbers of what's available, so you might check that as well. Thank you.
Let me just to conclude on that. Look, this is why we're doing these actions. One of the reasons we're doing these actions is we know there's only a limited supply, and so we have to knock this curve down, and we have to not have that huge spike. That's one of the reasons we're doing all the things that we keep doing. So thank you all very much. We'll see you all tomorrow.